Good afternoon. Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. Broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, you're listening to Fanny Crawford and
Stosh Ziolkowski.
This is the Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio, coming to you from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Don't forget, this evening, please join us to hear nationally acclaimed storyteller Andy Offutt Irwin at Stories in the Round at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, Maryland, 13245 Searfoss Pike. If you know Hagerstown, that's Salem Avenue extended west out of town. Stosh.
I became a Greek there.
I keep doing that. I make you a Russian, I make you a Greek, whatever. Okay. What's a sop doll? You've been talking about sop dolls recently.
Sop doll. Sop doll is the name of one of the Jack Tales, and sop doll is an expression that refers to a cat's paw.
It's
that expression is only used, as far as anyone in research has found, in one Jack Tale.
And you're going to tell us a version of that tale, I understand.
That version, if we don't run out of time.
Oh, we're not going to run out of time. Do you think I'm talking too much? Is that a secret coded message?
Not yet.
We also have another guest with us in the studio, and we may ask her a question or two. She's an interesting person and has had some good things to say this weekend. Ruth, you want to introduce yourself?
Good afternoon. My name is Ruth Walkup, and I am a new storyteller.
Well, not that new. You've had the whole weekend.
No, come on. That's right. You're right. I should tell you, I'm a new plus storyteller with a lot of help from you all and others. I hope to get better at that, and I look forward to talking with you a little bit about that.
Okay. Ruth's also visiting Shepherdstown today, and we hope before she takes off to do her little tour that we get her to tell us a bit about her experience with our weekend workshop Saturday and Sunday with Andy Offutt Irwin. We'll be talking more about Andy's performance this evening. And by the way, if you're interested in hearing Andy this evening at the Unitarian Church in Hagerstown, you can give me a call, not right this minute because I'm on the air, but if you call my cell phone at 301-730-1638, I can help you figure out all the details you need to come to hear Andy. You can also, well, I'm not going to give you my email address because I may not get back to check that before you need your information. Stosh, did you want to talk about why we're doing this show today the way we are?
Last week we started talking about Jack Tales. And I think first, before we do anything else, we should say what a Jack Tale is.
Good plan.
So I have a kind of a definition here. Jack is a hero and a character in legends, fairy tales, and nursery rhymes. Unlike moralizing heroes, Jack is often portrayed as lazy or foolish. But through his cleverness and sometimes tricks, he emerges triumphant. These tales came with European immigrants who settled in Appalachia in the early 1700s. And there's a lot of talk about Jack tales, who they belong to. They don't belong to anyone, but they are kind of centered in the southern part of the United States, because that's where the immigrants settled, in North Carolina and a number of the other states there. So, are you going to tell us a Jack tale?
Ah, you want me to do that now?
Yes, I do.
Then later. Okay, I'm happy to do that. This is a new version of a traditional tale. I'd be interested to know if any of our listeners have heard a different version of this story. So this is actually Jackie Jennifer Jasmine Judd. It's a Jackie tale rather than a Jack tale, per se. It's a heroine.
A curveball.
Yeah. I love to do that to you, Stosh. You have the greatest expressions when I surprise you that way. Okay, so I'm going to tell this story in two parts, though, because it's not our usual format, our usual length. So we'll need a station ID from you.
All right.
So are you keeping track of my time or am I keeping track of my time?
I'm watching the time.
Okay. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd. Once upon a time, there was a tiny, tidy young woman who lived by herself in a tiny, tidy house, just 10 feet wide and 10 feet long, surrounded by a little patch of yard, just 100 feet by 100 feet, the last house on the edge of a small village on the side of a mountain, ringed all round with deep green forest. To one side of the tiny, tidy house was a tiny, tidy garden, 10 feet wide by 10 feet long, filled with good things to eat and quite a few flower beds. On the other side of the tiny, tidy house was a tiny, tidy chicken coop that Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd had built all by her lone self with her own two hands. Jackie Jennifer Jasmine Judd was on good terms with her neighbors and had every intention of keeping it that way. Her closest neighbor was a friendly older man, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones, who would often stop at Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd's tiny, tidy house on his way to or from the village center. If Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd was at home, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones would lift his straw hat in the summertime or his rough fur hat in the wintertime and wish Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd a good day. Now, if Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd was not at home, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones would, well, Jackie Jennifer Jasmine Judd did not really know what he did when she was not at home because she wasn't there, but she did wonder. One day, Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd opened the door to her tiny, tidy chicken coop and counted her chickens before she collected their eggs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And there she stopped. She had not expected to stop counting. She had expected to see 13 chickens. But this particular day, she saw only 12. She looked in each of the 13 nesting boxes inside the chicken coop, behind every nesting box, underneath every nesting box, behind the door, up on the roof, and round the back. She even walked around her own tiny, tidy house, down the path and out on the road. But there was no number 13 chicken. She thought and thought and thought about what might have happened to the 13th chicken. The next morning, Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd opened the door to her tiny, tidy chicken coop and counted her chickens again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. All the way to 11, and there she stopped. She had not expected to stop counting. She'd expected to count 12 chickens. But this particular day, there were only 11. She looked in each of the 13 nesting boxes inside the chicken coop and behind every nesting box and underneath every nesting box, behind the door, up on the roof and round the back. She even walked out to the road, but there was no number 12 chicken and certainly no number 13. She thought and thought and thought about what might have happened to the 12th and 13th chickens. Later that morning, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones stopped at Jackie Jennifer Jasmine Judd's tiny, tidy house and yard on his way to the village center. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd said, "Good morning, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones. Have you seen my chickens? I have two chickens missing this morning. Do you know where they might be?" James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones said, no, he had not. Lifted his straw hat, wished her a good day, and took himself off to the village center. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd said to herself, "Somebody or something is getting my hens. If I don't figure it out soon, I will lose everyone. Of course, it could be a somebody, but maybe it's a something, a skunk or a fox." That night, she took out her grandmother's old shotgun and an old blanket outside in the dark, climbed into the tiny, tidy chicken coop, closed the door tight, and settled down to wait and watch. She sat with her back to the door, one eye half open for prowlers, varmints, and things that go bump in the night. There were none that night. When the sun rose the next morning, she stretched and yawned and grumbled a bit about spending the night outside instead of in her night's comfortable, tiny, tidy bed. And then she began to think. She thought and thought and thought about what might have happened to the 12th and 13th chickens. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd was fond of her chickens, but she didn't want to sleep in the chicken coop every night. If skunks and foxes weren't getting her chickens, it must be a someone. Truth is, she suspected her neighbor, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones. But you cannot just ask a neighbor if he's stealing your chickens, even if he is. She had an idea, and that idea led to a plan. Late that morning, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones stopped by the tiny, tidy house on his way to the village. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd said, "Good morning, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones. Have you seen my big, shaggy, black guard dog?" "What dog? You don't have a dog," said James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones. "Well, I didn't," said Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Jones, but do now. Got him from relations on the other side of the family, other side of the mountain." "I don't see any dog," said James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones, looking round the house and yard. Why, there he goes now. See him? Running up the creek there, right along the mountain ridge? No, I don't see any dog. Right there. He's making all the little trees by the creek shake and rattle their leaves and creating quite a splashing there in the creek. Look at those huge black ears, big brown eyes, enormous yellow teeth and shiny black nose. Oh, he's a fine guard dog. I see him now. Kind of mean looking, eh?" But Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd had nothing more to say about her new dog. James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones tipped his straw hat, wished her a good day, and took himself off to the village center. The next morning, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones stopped by the tiny, tidy house. He said, aggrieved and indignant, "Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd, you had best keep that big, black, shaggy guard dog chained up. I ran into him last night on my way home. He was standing right there in the middle of the road. He growled at me, and I couldn't tell if he was going to let me pass. I might not have made it home at all." Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd almost laughed out loud at this fuss over an imaginary dog. She managed a stern face and said, "Why, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones, that is simply not possible. My big shaggy black guard dog has been chained in the yard or right here in the house with me since you saw him that first day. You were just seeing shadows in the dark last night." James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones frowned, but tipped his straw hat, wished her a good day, and took himself off to the village center. Next morning, Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd herself set off for the village grocer's. She needed flour for her weekly bread making. On the village road, she met James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones. He tipped his straw hat, wished her a good day, and said, "Mr. Green, the grocer, wants to know what you're feeding that big shaggy black guard dog. He says it's not good to feed a dog with people food." Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd wanted to ask how in the world Mr. Green, the grocer, had any idea there was a big black guard dog in the area, but she restrained herself. She said she would talk to Mr. Green, and she did. She bought her flour and a bag of dog kibble at his suggestion, though she grumbled to herself about buying dog food for an imaginary dog. That afternoon, James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones knocked on the door of the tiny, tidy house. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd opened the door. James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones lifted up his pant leg to show her a red puncture wound on his calf. "Dog was in the middle of the road again when I got home. I tried to chase him off. He ran away, but when I turned my back, he got me good from behind. That's no guard dog. He's a menace." Jacqueline and Jennifer Jasmine Judd stood in the doorway, her eyes wide and her mouth stuck in a little round O. James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones glowered, turned and walked toward his own house and yard, still talking. Menace put a real hole right in this leg, guard dog. He's gonna kill somebody. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd found her voice and called after him. You could have made that hole yourself with a little nail. He was chained up the whole time. 2 days after that, Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd stopped at the village post office to mail a birthday card to Great Aunt Jasmine, who lived the other side of the mountain. She said, "Good morning, Mrs. Stamp," to the postmistress sitting behind the counter. Mrs. Stamp gave her a long look. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd, why in the world do you allow that big shaggy black guard dog to run wild in the streets? Yesterday he barked at me as I was leaving the post office, scared me out of my wits, chased me right back into the post office and caused me to slam the door in his very face. If I had been a second slower, he would have taken off my right hand. He's so big he's up to my waist. If he stood on his hind legs, he'd be taller than I am. And mean, growled and showed me those yellow teeth he did. I waited a full 30 minutes till he wandered off before I could come out and run home. We just cannot let a big mean dog run wild like that. It's not right, not fair to everyone else. The door of the post office opened and in came Miss Ratchet, the current proprietor of the hardware store and granddaughter of the former mayor. She spied Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd, put her hands on her own two substantial hips, and glared at Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd. What's this I hear about you accusing James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones of stabbing himself with a nail? I've seen that big, shaggy, black, so-called guard dog myself. If you intend to keep that dog, you need to chain him up. Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd felt her own hair stand on end. What in the world were these people talking about? Why were they all suddenly seeing her imaginary big shaggy black guard dog everywhere? Out loud, she said, "I am so sorry, Mrs. Stamp. That was just a terrible thing to happen to you. I think my big black shaggy guard dog has been chained up at home all week. If somehow it was him, I shall certainly see that it never happens again." Mrs. Stamp snapped back. "It certainly was your big black guard dog. Huge black ears, big brown eyes, enormous yellow teeth, and that shiny black nose." And with that, she turned her back on Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd and began to sort the mail. Miss Ratchet folded her arms across her ample chest and said, "Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd left the post office, walking slowly through the village, brow furrowed and mouth turned down with worry. Arriving at her tiny, tidy house, she found herself walking round to the back, stopping at the corner of the house to peer into the backyard, and only then realized she was wondering if she would find the big black shaggy guard dog, huge black ears, big brown eyes, enormous yellow teeth, and shiny black nose, chained up just as she had promised her neighbors. She did not find him there, but she startled as she walked round to the front to find herself face to face with James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones and Mr. Green the grocer close behind. James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones was holding onto his left arm with his other hand, and there was blood dripping from a long gash on his arm. He was talking as he came up to Jacqueline Jennifer Jasmine Judd, getting louder with every step, but it was hard to understand what he was saying because Mr. Green the grocer was also talking and coming down the village road where another five or six neighbors, all having their say and hurrying toward the tiny, tidy house. I think I'll stop right there.
Wow. That's a great story, Fanny. That's so much math, neatness, organization, and imagination. Yes, the counting. Okay. So this is the Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. Independent community radio coming to you from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And a reminder, this very evening, story listeners will have an opportunity to hear acclaimed storyteller Andy Offutt Irwin at Stories in the Round at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, 13245 Sear Foss Pike. It's $12 at the door or $10 if you register ahead. And you can do that by calling Fanny.
301-730-1638. 301-730-1638.
Right. And then Eileen Evans will be here in July, Stories in the Round. And Megan Hicks will be here in August. And we'll tell you more about that during next week's program. So, Fanny, are you ready to continue your tale?
Yes, we're almost at the end. It went faster than I thought it would, so...
I'm probably talking faster. I want to find this dog.
Okay. Well, we left off with James Jeffrey, Jeremiah Jones, and Mr. Green, the grocer, coming into the teeny, tiny, tidy yard of Jacqueline, Jennifer, Jasmine, Judd, and right behind him, five or six neighbors, all having their say and hurrying toward the tiny, tidy house. James Jeffrey Jeremiah Jones, of course, is bleeding as he comes into the yard. Jacqueline, Jennifer, Jasmine, Judd took in this scene, eyes wide and throat dry, and immediately threw up her hands. Please, all of you, come in closer. We cannot allow a big, mean dog to run wild. It's not right, not fair to everyone else. Please, wait right here. Almost every able-bodied adult from the village was gathering before the tiny, tidy house. Jacqueline, Jennifer, Jasmine, Judd disappeared inside her house and came back out, carrying her grandmother's old shotgun. From the doorway, she said to the crowd, "You are all witnesses. This ends now." She turned in the doorway, firing the shotgun into the house. There was the blasting sound of gunshot exploding in a small enclosed space. She turned back to the crowd, sobbing, tears streaming down her face. She put down the shotgun, walked into the crowd, apologizing, clasping neighbors' hands and wiping her tears as she came forward. The villagers milled about for a few minutes, pausing to pat Jacqueline, Jennifer, Jasmine, Judd on the shoulder and offer their handkerchiefs. Within the hour, they had all dispersed to their homes and shared the story with the few neighbors who had missed the morning's excitement. The story lived on for decades, but it did not include the part about Jacqueline, Jennifer, Jasmine, Jones. I'm sorry, Jacqueline, Jennifer, Jasmine, Judd, retrieving the gunshot 12th and 13th chickens from under the chiffer robe where they had been nesting and brooding of their own accord, unbeknownst to Jennifer, Jasmine, Jacqueline Jones, nor the hole that she dug to bury them and their 1,000 scattered feathers.
Wow. That's great. That is great. I, except for saying the names.
I'm still working on Jacqueline, Jennifer, Jasmine, Joan, Judd, and James, Jeffrey, Jeremiah Jones.
Yeah. That's a lot of letters. 29 yes. For one name and 25 for the other.
And obviously, so, I haven't said them often enough because they're still not rolling off my tongue.
If I tried to tell that, I would need to have those names
and
on the back of the classroom wall or a library wall so I could refer to them.
Regularly.
I lost count of how many times. I was counting at first how many
times. Were you?
Sure.
Too many.
I think that would be a great story. Not only is it interesting to the kids' imagination and all, but there's math in it. There's geometry in it about the 10 by 10, you know, and all kind of lessons could come out of something like that.
You are such a good
organization.
Teacher.
And I think the kids would love the idea of the imaginary dog and people lying about it, you know, because mm-hmm. they wouldn't see it as, they would quickly pick up on it. These people are, you know, telling stories.
Well, my dad loved Shaggy Dog stories. Right. So I thought I would turn this folktale into a Shaggy Dog. It's already a bit of a Shaggy Dog story, though.
Okay. So I'm going to go off the script a little bit and ask you to invite our guest.
Oh, yes.
Ruth, to make some comments about the questions we prepared for her.
Okay. Well, you really have your choice of questions at this point. You could comment on the story that you just heard, or you could talk about the workshop that you attended this weekend, or you could tell us what you hope to find in Shepherdstown or what you found here before when you were here.
Well, I would put it back on you.
To choose a question?
To choose a question or a topic.
Yeah. Well, do you want to say anything about the story before we move on to the workshop?
I'm fairly new to Jack Tales or mm-hmm. Jackie Tales, and
that's why you're such a valuable speaker.
And I think Stosh, if you'll go back a little bit to that definition of a Jack Tale, I think you had some elements in there about it's not a moral tale. And it's more of a somebody gets into a pickle tale and gets out of it sort of maybe by their own mistakes, but they're able to get out of that kind of a pickle.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to see what you can do with that structure of a tale. You know, you've got the outline. You need to have a main character, a Jack or a Jackie or mm-hmm. whoever it is, and you're not trying to teach anybody something. You're just trying to show how people can get into muddles, and we all do, don't we? And so to be able to get out of that just almost by mistake and or maybe using a little bit of wit. It sounded like Jackie was a little more strategic.
She made some serious mistakes.
Well, she, you know, to make up the dog in the first place. That was a little bit of a strategic move on her part.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She was trying to sort of pull out her neighbor to admit or to be scared of this dog, but it backfired on her.
Well, it might have backfired on both of them. You end up with holes in him.
And that's sort of, I suppose, you don't have to explain those in a story, do you?
That's no, you don't.
One of the things about storytelling is that you can leave things to your audience to imagine or to question. So thank you for that, for helping me to understand a little bit more about it. Jack and Jackie Tales.
Yeah, Jack Tales are always fun.
And
so that's probably
clever.
The most important.
She was clever to create the dog, and mm-hmm. she was clever to use the shotgun, although it wasn't clever to shoot it into her own house.
Yeah, so, a bit too clever at times.
I could see a group of kids having a lot of fun discussing that.
Yeah.
You know, and
just as we kids are.
Yes, right.
Right now.
You don't have to be a kid under 12 to discuss Jack and Jackie Tales.
Right. I didn't say any age.
Okay, so we're talking with Stosh Zielkowski and I, Fanny Crawford, are talking with our guest for the day, Ruth Walkup, and she's going to tell us a bit, I think, about the workshop that all three of us attended this weekend with Andy Offit Irwin, and you'll hear more about Andy Offit Irwin again during the broadcast.
I think one of the things, I haven't been to a lot of workshops, and I'd like to encourage your listeners to consider going to workshops. One of the things about a workshop, and this one in particular, was that it's a very safe space to explore your own craft as a storyteller. And the craft of developing a story, the craft of performing or just simply telling a story, and then the humility And openness to have people who care about storytelling and care about you to give you good, honest feedback, generally positive feedback to help you make that story better, and then an opportunity to redo it so that you don't just get stuck with, oh, what if I tried this? What if I try that in the next telling? But you get to do that next telling. And so workshops can be very intense, and very productive because of that intensity. Another thing that I think is really exciting about a story workshop is the variety of stories that you get to hear, as well as the variety of people who tell those stories. And it's delightful, and it's eye-opening, and it's if you haven't been to a workshop, I'd encourage you to do that, or figure out a way to run your own, because you'll find all kinds of people and all kinds of stories come from places that end up being magic when you create that safe space to hear them.
Yeah, that's part of the wonder of it, of most storytelling workshops for me, is that all of us are invited to give feedback. It's not exactly a critique. It's more about saying what you liked and what was missing for you, maybe, and helping the teller see things that they might not have realized before they told it in this particular space.
Something I'd like to point out about the workshop was the age difference.
Yes.
There was probably an age difference of almost 45 years from the youngest to the oldest participant. And that's incredible
true.
Age range to have people sharing ideas and yeah. to have people expressing their opinions about some things.
Yeah.
And that age range, it doesn't mean that the older you get, the better stories you tell. There yes, are some young
not
folks
necessarily.
Who, no, you have more material that you need to think about in your life if you're choosing to tell a personal story. But we heard stories this past weekend that some were personal and some were about made-up people and some were moralistic, had morals to them, and some were for pure entertainment, and some were challenging to listen to because of the topics were so relevant to the lives we live in a fast-paced America, mm-hmm. and others were about sort of the tenderness, the universal tenderness of life and relationships, and so there's a lot going on, and that a lot can be taken home.
Occasionally, all of those things might be in one story.
Yeah, it can be exhausting to hear it.
It's an exhausting weekend for sure. 2 days.
And storytelling is not only for adults and older people. There is a move in the country. A number of storytellers are working with youth,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
even at the National Storytelling Festival, there is a showcase for young storytellers, and some of the storytellers throughout the country are teaching storytelling in schools and have storytelling clubs, and they're training young people to do performances. And at the National Storytelling Conference in Kansas City this year, there will be a program put on by some youth storytellers. So it's not just for adults, it's for everybody. And it's not just to tell to children, to little children. They're, you know, fans of all ages, listeners of all ages.
And just on that point, if you aren't able to go to one of these festivals, there are a number of resources online for youth and young people to learn how to gather stories and how to tell those stories. I know that StoryCorps has a big, I think it's called the Great Thanksgiving Tell,
mm-hmm.
And online you can find resources for teens to help them figure out how to ask the older people around their table stories and then collect those stories. So it's a multi-generational skill and form of entertainment and way that we can engage with each other, I think.
Yeah.
So I did some research this week because we're talking about Jack Tales.
Before you do that, you want to do a station break, or do you want me to do that?
You can do that.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yes.
Okay, you're listening to the Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org from broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. We're going to continue with our show at this point.
Okay. So information about Jack Tales that I discovered in 1992, a community college in Richlands, Virginia, requested from a professional artist that he design a wall in a new building that was being constructed, 30 feet by 50 feet. And they gave him license to pick the topic and the subject. The only thing they asked was that he should pick something that would reflect on the four counties that surrounded that area, Buchanan, Dickinson, Russell, and Tazewell. At first, he had to do a lot of research. He was trying to get an idea, and then someone popped up in front of him, and that someone was Jack. And he decided that who better to represent people of the four counties than young Jack, the hero of hundreds of lively tales indigenous to the Appalachian Mountains. And so the wall was built eventually after the design was created, and it contains many scenes from a number of well-known Jack tales, and it's made of 8,000 bricks and made in the form of some ancient walls that are in the bas relief. And we have a few pictures that you can't see, but if you go online and Google the Jack Tales wall, there's a lot of great information about that. So now, would you like to hear a Jack Tale?
Oh, please do, Stosh.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. This Jack Tale is called Sop Doll. Jack and his mom weren't doing so well. Jack decided to go out and seek his fortune, see where he could go and find some money so that he could come back to his ma and help out. Jack was on the road, walking. Eventually, he came to a nice house that was sitting above a mill. And he knocked on the door of the house, and the man answered, and he said, I'm looking for work. Do you have any work? The man said, I do have lots of work if you're willing. I have a mill sitting down there by the river, and I've been looking for someone to run that mill. I don't have time to grind all the corn that people bring to me, and I'd love to have somebody do it, and I pay well. And Jack said, well, I'm up for that. He said, there is a problem. Each person I've hired to run the mill, I found dead the very next morning. Jack paused. And then he said, well, if it's haunted, I'm not worried about that. I'm not afraid of any haunts. So let's go see the mill. So they went down. The man explained to him, told him what the salary would be, and said he would bring him food each day. And there was a fireplace. There was utensils to cook the food. And Jack could get to work right away. So he did. Jack was a good, quick learner. He learned how to move the gears and things that would direct the water into the mill, turn the wheel, and he began working. Well, just that evening, when he was finished what he had been doing, he turned the water off by directing the flow back into the river, and there were a man appeared at the door, an elderly man who had a small sack, and he said, I'm probably too late, but Jack, I wonder if you could grind this for me. And Jack said, well, sure. He went and pushed the mechanism back in place and got started. And just as he was about to start, he said, how'd you know my name was Jack? The man said, as soon as I saw you, I knew you were Jack. Well, Jack round it for him, put it back in his sack, and the man said, I want to give you something. He paid for the services, but then he handed Jack a small knife, and it was made of silver. And he said, you've been very kind to me, Jack. You did this work for me, even though it was after hours. I want you to have this present. And Jack looked down, was looking at the knife, and when he looked up, the man was gone. So the man who owned the mill showed up and had some food for Jack. He had some meat and some vegetables and gave them to Jack, and he said, good night, Jack. I probably won't see you in the morning, but hope I do. And he left. And Jack thought, this is silly. I'm not worried about this. Look, this is a nice place and everything. So he built up a fire and a fireplace, and he started to cook the meat, and he noticed a cat sitting in one of the windows. There were windows in the mill rooms that didn't have glass in them or anything like that. They were just open, and didn't think anything of it. Jack liked animals. And as he was continuing to cook his meat, he noticed more cats showing up. There were a dozen windows in that mill. And soon there was a cat sitting in each window. Well, Jack just kept on cooking, and finally, one of the cats, the biggest one, jumped down, walked over near Jack, peered right in Jack's face, and then looked into the pan Jack was cooking in, and said, sup, doll, and put its paw right into the skillet. And Jack smacked his paw and said, I'll sop your doll, I'll cut it off. And the cat backed up, Jack went back to cooking, and again, the cat walked up, stared right in Jack's face, and put his other paw right into the meat. Sop, doll. Jack reached over, grabbed his new silver knife, and sliced that paw right off. The cat squealed, meow, and all the cats started meow, and then they disappeared. They left the windows. Well, Jack looked down on the floor, was going to kick that paw, but when he saw it wasn't a paw, it was a hand, and it had a ring on it. Well, Jack picked it up, wrapped it up in a piece of cloth, set it on the side. He dumped all that food out of the pan and scrubbed it and started with a new batch, because he hadn't put all the food in there to cook, and he cooked himself a nice supper. The next morning, the old man came down to the mill, and he opened the door, and Jack said, good morning. He just stood there staring. I never expected to see you. Said, well, here I am. I'm ready to go back to work. The old man said, I thought I'd have to be burying you today. Jack said, no, I'm fine. I did have something strange happen last night. And he walked over and he took that piece of cloth and he showed the old man. And when he showed the old man that hand with the ring on it, the old man got pale. Looked real sad and upset. He said to Jack, come with me. We need to go up to my house. And on the way to the house, the old man said, I didn't have any breakfast this morning. My old woman said she wasn't feeling good and didn't want to get out of bed yet. Maybe for lunch she'd make something. And I didn't think anything of it. Well, but by that time they got to the house and they went in and they went to the bedroom. The old man opened the door and said, how are you feeling? She said, not well. Leave me alone. And the old man said, show me your left hand. And the woman kind of rolled over and stuck her right hand out. And he said, no, the other one. She rolled over again and stuck her right hand out. And he said, no, the left hand. He grabbed the covers and pulled it down. And he could see the stump. It was his wife's hand. He recognized that ring. He and Jack left the room immediately, and the wife was yelling. She wanted her friends. And when Jack and the old man got to the front door, 11 women came through the door, quick as a bunch. They all went up to the bedroom. Well, the old man didn't hesitate. He closed the front door, and he put a bar across it, and he got some fuel, and he lit the house on fire. And he and Jack stood on the road and watched as the 12 witches burned, and the house was burned down. Jack stayed there for a while with the old man, and he made some good money, and finally he decided it was time to move on. He had heard about a giant, and he thought he was going to go and see what all this talk was about a giant in the next county. And so he left the old man, said goodbye, and started out on a new adventure.
Wow! We've hit both ends of the spectrum here for wild Jack tales and the occult, I think. Whoa. And you found that in a collection of Jack tales, Stosh.
I've known the story before, but I've never performed it, you know, in a, like on a stage or something. And I worked on it a number of times. And when we began talking about Jack tales, I thought that's one. And so yeah. I worked on that this week to make sure I knew it.
Scary stories.
And yeah. And it's great. And it has all kind of things in it that are in many Jack tales. The old man who knew Jack's name.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of people think that's kind of a religious symbol. Like mm-hmm. Sometimes the old man says, I knew you before I saw you, or something like that, and always disappears. And it always appears because of Jack has done something kind and mm-hmm. usually gets a reward mm-hmm. from it, just mm-hmm. or some advice that he can later use. And
in this case, a very important tool and weapon.
Yes.
That's quite a story. I've heard other versions of that story, but never called Sopdal, as far as I know. So that's it. And sometimes there's more than one challenge during the night.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's multiple haunts that he has to figure out how to deal with them, or they come on different nights.
Well,
sometimes.
Like all the Jack tales, some people, even storytellers who've gotten involved with Jack tales, think that Jack tales started somewhere around the 50s, 1950s, because that's when people started paying more attention with television about storytelling,
mm-hmm.
and then in 1973, storytelling had in this country had the nugget that became the boom storytelling is now with Jonesboro, Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
when one of the best tellers of Jack tales, probably the most famous Jack tale storyteller, Ray Hicks, performed at that first festival mm-hmm. where there were only mm-hmm. about 35 people and a few tellers, people sitting on hay bales in front of the courthouse steps. That has grown to be a weekend where there were as many as 25 tellers and on some special weekends, 12 to 15,000 people.
Oh, there have been more than that. And, you know, I've been there when there have been more than 20.
And Ray Hicks is the granddaddy of the Jack tale in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray didn't learn the Jack tales the way I do, by picking up a book and reading them or listening to somebody tell them on a stage. Ray knew them from his family. And also, a lot of the Jack tales Ray told were based on his own personal experience. Ray grew up very poor. And from the day he was born to the day he died, he never lived in a home with electricity or running water. And as a young child, everything, they had to find everything for food, for subsistence in any way, and protection. And he and his wife, Rosa, lived in the cabin from the first day they were together until Ray died and Rosa followed them about 8 years after that.
So storytelling was their primary entertainment.
Yes.
And social outlet.
Yeah.
Bringing other people.
And Ray, if Ray was beginning storytelling in our world today with all the festivals going on now, he could probably be one of the richest entertainers in the country. But he seldom worried about money. He just liked telling his stories.
Mm-hmm.
And his stories were a wealth of wonder. So,
thank you, Stosh.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate that. Ruth, would you do a station ID for us? This is our last official station ID before closing ID.
Sure. This is the Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio coming to you from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And don't forget to join us all this evening to hear storyteller Andy Offit Irwin at Stories in the Round. That's at 7 o'clock tonight, Monday the 26th of June, at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown. And that's on Searfoss Pike, 13245 Searfoss Pike. If you've got any questions about it, please call Fanny, and Fanny's phone number is
301-730-1638.
The Storytelling Hour.
That was our special guest today, Ruth Walkup, who joined us yesterday and the day before for our workshop with Andy Offit Irwin. Learning more about storytelling and practicing telling our stories to each other and getting feedback. And Ruth's visiting Shepherdstown. This is not her first time here. She's going to do a little exploring while she's here. We're going to talk, I was going to ask Ruth, I guess, what's exciting about Shepherdstown for her and what she might see while she's here.
Well, I actually didn't know that Shepherdstown was such a center for storytelling.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I came to Shepherdstown a number of years ago as a conferencee. I was getting oriented into a new job and a new role, and this was the center for that, the sort of off-site from my job in Washington, D.C. So I came here for a couple of days midweek and was surrounded by the mountains and the history and things, but I didn't know about storytelling. So I think one of the things I'm going to do in my explorations of this town is to sort of look at stories that I might be able to bring out as somebody who hasn't here before in this kind of a light, and see if I can match that up with some of the things that I did before and maybe come up with a new story.
That'll be fun. All right. We'll be eager to hear how that works out. And that's a great segue. Thank you. To have me talk about the Speak Story series in Shepherdstown. This is season 5 of the Speak Story series. And of course, Adam Booth, Shepherdstown's favorite storyteller, is the coordinator of that series. It's a 9-session series, meets at 7:30, generally on the second Tuesday of the month, but you do have to pay attention because there is a couple exceptions to that. So the next session will be July 11th in the Storer Ballroom, which is in the Shepherdstown University Student Center on the third floor at 301 North King Street. And the performer on July 11th will be Tokahaya Inajin, also known as Kevin Locke. And if Kevin Locke happens to be listening or hear this podcast, I hope he will forgive me for murdering his name. I should just call him Kevin Locke because I can do that. He's a Native American out of South Dakota and a world-famous visionary hoop dancer, a preeminent player of the indigenous plains flute. He's a traditional storyteller and a kind of a de facto cultural ambassador. Also a recipient of the National Heritage Fellowship, honoring his Lakota and Anishinaabe roots. August 8th, our own Maryland Jane Dorfman will be there, and that's back at Reynolds Hall, which is the primary venue for the Speak Story series. Jane was actually with us this weekend, learning and participating in storytelling development with Andy Offit Irwin. Jane coordinates the Washington Folk Festival, and she's a season teller and a story teacher. And she's going to be telling some of the Arabian Nights, some of the lesser known tales from Arabian Nights. I think Jane is the quintessential Arabian Night storyteller. She has an incredible repertoire and does an excellent job of sharing those stories. The ones she'll share on August 8th are adult stories with twists and turns and some surprise endings and a little bit of eroticism in there. She promises she won't tell anything that will embarrass any of us, but it should be quite interesting. On September 19th, also at Reynolds Hall, Bill Harley will be here. Bill's, of course, coming down from New England, and he uses song and story to paint hilarious pictures of American life. Bill's recipient of 2 Grammy Awards, and if you've heard Bill before, you know what a funny storyteller he is, but also that he's full of wit and wisdom, and we all learn something when we hear from him. The Speak Story series runs through December, but if you want more information about the upcoming sessions or you want more details about how to get yourself there, you can call 304-886-9481 or go to www.speakstoryseries.com. $12 at the door. Stosh, what else do we need to cover in our last 5 minutes?
Well, I'm going to encourage our listeners, and everyone, in fact, that they should tell stories. And if they're an older person, like a grandparent, like I am, they should write down their family stories, as you have a copy from T.H. Barnes, your family stories, so that they can share them with the younger generations. And some people would say, oh, the kids don't want to hear those stories. And maybe the kids don't want to hear those stories today, but guaranteed in the future, they will want to know what Grandpa was doing at a certain time in his life. And, you know, especially if he did anything at all, because there are lots of exciting things that they'll find in Grandpa's stories. And they should also ask, the young people and families should ask their elders to tell them stories and spend some time listening to them, because it is a good thing. And that's my message for today.
Oh, thank you, Sash. Okay, you even left me time to talk about Andy Offit Irwin again.
Yes.
So the Stories in the Round series is also a 9-session series, starts in April, runs through December, and Andy Irwin is our performer this evening at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, 13245 Sierra Foss Pike. Andy, we're expecting a big crowd, so you might want to get there a little bit early. We already have a lot of advance registrations, and people are calling pretty regularly through the day, actually. If you want more information, well, I should tell you it's 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church. It's $12 at the door, $10 in advance. If you want more information, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638. Next month in July, we have Eileen Evans on July 24th, Megan Hicks in August, and of course, there's more coming after that in September, October, November, and December, and we'll tell you more about those next week. I want to make a special note of talking about podcasts. If you missed the beginning of this broadcast or you want to hear what we've done in the past, you can go to talltales.enlightenradio.org and hear Stosh tell stories, hear me tell stories, and many, many other guests going back many months. And we will continue to post as we broadcast. You have to give us about 36 hours to get the podcast up, though. We're slow here when it comes to technology. We're real good talkers. Not so good about managing online. But we're learning, aren't we, Stosh?
Yes. Slowly.
Okay. So thank you for listening today. I want to thank our special guest, Ruth Walkup. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun to be with you another day and to see what you all do to keep this storytelling craft alive. And I'm so excited to be there tonight to hear Andy Offit Irwin at the Universalist Church at 7 o'clock. So I hope to see some of you there too.
Excellent. And we'll look forward to having you back, Ruth, when you're ready to tell a story on air. You can be thinking about that.
I'll be thinking about it. I might even try a Jacqueline tale or something.
All right. Very good. Okay. This is Fanny Crawford and
Stosh Silkowski
signing off on the Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio, coming to you from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Please come back next Monday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. And
the Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand your own stories.